Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us and our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 92 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So we're in the winter. For sure. We always talk about the weather to start the show off, right?
Always.
As people know. So, sunshine, 30 degrees outside, nice and clear, but I'm already ready for spring to get here.
Yeah, me too, for sure. I actually decorated my house today for Valentine's Day. And
what?
Yeah, Valentine's is February 14th.
Yeah, this is January the 10th.
Okay, exactly. But you have to, like, take it down on February 15th, so you have to, like, maximize.
Okay, well, that's a new perspective on that.
What do you think I should have done? Put it up on the 1st?
I think January is still winter.
So is February.
Decorations. And then, yes, once you get to February 1st, then you could go ahead and decorate for Valentine's.
Well, but I decorated my house today for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so.
And I am stoked, but I had to, like, talk myself out of putting some, like, springy-looking stuff out. You know what I mean? Like, if it didn't have a heart and it wasn't red.
Red or pink.
It didn't belong out, you know? So, like, the blush-colored flowers or these kinds of things, like, I kind of left alone.
What's a blush-colored flower?
Placemats. I have blush-colored. They're, like, I don't know. They look
like blush
flowers.
You put on your face?
I don't know. The color blush.
Blush. Okay. Pinkish.
Jesus.
Tan. Okay.
Like a flower.
Like a blush flower.
Anyways.
Okay.
Weird.
All right. So, I don't really have a word of the week, but I thought...
Okay, good. Never mind.
No. Go ahead. What's the word of the week?
We were going to say phenochromocytoma.
No. So, we have a case of the week, which happens to be your little dog, Zoe, and I thought about pheochromocytoma, schistocytes, some of these other things associated, but
I can barely say pheochromocytoma.
Yeah. Well, I'm not smart enough to completely understand it and all the pathophysiology and other physiological effects that go along with that. So, we learned a little bit about blood pressure with her. We'll get into her case in just a second, but we learned something we already know, or knew, rather.
In regards to what?
To blood pressure.
Okay.
What did we learn about blood pressure? So we thought she had a pheochromocytoma, and she was going to be hypertensive. And when she presented the morning of surgery, her blood pressure was like
basically
280
of like,
over 200.
Yeah.
And she's a little Chihuahua type dog, so she is kind of on the nervous end. And I guess my point would be that we struggle with blood pressure in veterinary medicine. Actually, my son Asher asked me yesterday, because he's doing an internship with a cardiology group, in Middle Georgia. He asked me how we check blood pressure in pets. And so we kind of went through that, but,
so you basically told him very similar to humans, right? But like, obviously the accuracy is much less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Non-invasive blood pressure, meaning like a cuff around the leg.
Cuff around the leg. We use front leg, rear leg, typically below the hock or below the elbow, right?
Mm-hmm.
For dogs and cats.
And sometimes the tail base.
The results are just so variable.
Right.
And so again, we pretty much convinced ourselves that your little dog had an adrenal tumor. We thought it was going to be a pheochromocytoma, and it was going to be nestled, the lesion we saw was near the left kidney to the midline and cranial or towards the head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sitting right over the caudal vena cava and near the aorta and some other major vessels. And so we took her blood pressure. We thought this was an adrenal gland based off of primarily our ultrasound findings, which multiple doctors did the ultrasound. I ultrasounded her multiple times. It looked like a very distinct lesion. And we decided to go ahead and do a CT scan pre-op.
Mm-hmm. We did not use contrast, so it wasn't much more informative, right? Would you agree?
It was, though.
You think so?
I guess that's the point. So you only know what you know, and your eyes can sometimes deceive you. And so I looked at the CT when y'all moved her into surgery, and I looked at it trying to see if it was going to give us any information, and I really didn't think it was going to. And when I looked at it, I saw the great vessels that we just talked about. I saw the mass, which you had found the mass and, you know, pulled it up on the screen. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of started scrolling with the three different views on that mass. And I'm like, gosh, this looks like it comes from the spleen. Mm. That's weird that it looks like that. Right? And mm-hmm. so, lo and behold, we get into surgery. And luckily, it was not an adrenal mass.
Or it a pheochromocytoma.
But it was a splenic mass.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, it just, the older I get, the more knowledge I gain, I guess the more I realize we don't always know what's going on, and, you know, the more you think you understand things, probably the more you really don't.
Sure. So I guess going back to the blood pressure in this case, it wasn't helpful. It was a piece of information that kind of derailed us off of the actual path. And so sometimes well, it made our thought process go that way, right? More in line with the pheochromocytoma.
Yeah, and we thought about, do we delay the procedure a couple of weeks and try to get her blood pressure under control, which is what the recommendation is if it is a pheochromocytoma.
Right.
And, you know, we being us, you and I decided, nope, let's go ahead and take her to surgery because this has grown fairly rapidly over the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think and hope that was the right decision.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to get all philosophical here, right? But like it's veterinary medicine, it's medicine in general, and you can only go at it with the knowledge, the educational knowledge that you have and the information that's presented to you, right? So
right. We
definitely could have gotten in there and it could have been a pheochromocytoma, and absolutely, but I think it's not 100%, I guess
it's
is where
I'm
going.
It's not an exact science in what we do. It's not a, you know, we're not faced with broken cars, which sometimes broken cars don't get fixed the first, second, or third time correctly either. But yes, we're dealing with living, breathing, dynamic lives that we work on, and we're the same way, right? We're not perfect, unfortunately.
Right.
And as many tools and high-tech toys as we have here at Russell Ridge Animal Hospital, it still doesn't make everything a slam dunk.
Right.
Diagnosis. Usually, though, when Dr. Meryl Reese is involved, it's a slam dunk diagnosis.
And so, she gets the basketball hoop out. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But anyways, for those people that are wondering, Zoe's actually at home. She's doing well. We will continue to monitor
her. So we removed her spleen.
We did.
We removed a lymph node in the area that we think is affected, unfortunately, as well. And then we biopsied her liver. Mm-hmm. And we will wait on those results to see how we need to proceed.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad she's doing well, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Pheochromocytoma. Somebody can look that up and email us maybe the definition. And we will send you, what do we have? I'm looking around. A GVA.
So I talked to Dr. Reese about it already, I was going to tell you. Unless you want to give something away.
What do you mean you talked to her about it?
Well, she, like, when she asked me, you know, when she was here the other day, you know, how's my dog doing? You know, was it a pheochromocytoma? Yada, yada, yada. And then they started breaking down the word in the doctor's office amongst the doctors.
Pheo.
Meaning, like,
chromo,
a color.
Color. Cytoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, pheo, cell. I think, apparently means bluish. And then chromo, so blue in color. And
cell.
Then cell. Toma, overgrowth.
Yeah,
I don't
adrenal
know.
Medulla, I believe, is where they come from. Could be wrong there. So.
Well, that's where a pheochromocytoma, is that what you're saying, comes mm-hmm. from?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
if anybody is listening and can email angel at mygavet.com, we will send you either a GVA Arctic cup. We talked about Arctic.
So similar to Yeti.
Polar bear, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or we have these really cool gifts that we gave to the doctors last year. The little portfolio.
They're like stationary sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Cool.
Okay.
So, what are they emailing? They're emailing more a defined definition of a
They're
going to
look it up and, yeah, just send us some information maybe that we can share with everybody that would be more succinct and interesting than what we just said, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. A lot of news stories. and we'll get into them shortly, but Healthy Pet, Happy Life. Preventative care profiles I wanted to talk about today.
Okay.
We normally would call them annual profiles or annual health screen or senior health screen.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things I want to talk about. Is it a good idea or not? And why?
Okay.
And then kind of the who, what, where. Not so much the where, but who, what type of patients would we recommend these preventative care profiles for? And maybe what are we looking at and doing and looking for? Maybe maybe who, what, why is better. I'm gonna cross out where. So, Angel, is it a good idea if you love your pet and you are an awesome pet parent to do an annual set of blood and or urine work to evaluate what's going on in their little bodies?
So the short answer is yes.
Okay.
I feel like I've said this many times on this podcast and throughout my life that I feel like, you know, some people will say like, you know, love equals food when it comes to pets, right? Like we continue to put food in the dog's bowl and they eventually get overweight and that kind of thing. But that just means that we love them so much. For me, it's kind of the opposite, right? Like good healthcare and making sure that you're doing everything so that your pet can live a full life is what I would think equals love.
Okay.
So yes, I do think that running a full blood profile on your pet annually for dogs under and cats under 7 years old without current chronic medical conditions is a fantastic idea. I think once your pet has an established chronic medical condition, you should probably consider running their labs a little bit more often to look
for
change.
Every 6 months or so, typically, is what we would say. Yeah.
And then once they kind of get into that senior pet age at 7, I think you should run it a little bit more often as well.
Okay.
So the type of profile, and I guess this is kind of going down a different road here, but typically, I think in veterinary medicine, we offer younger pets an annual health screen, which is a more comprehensive, it's a shortened down abbreviated profile that doesn't include urine. My dogs that I've always had, I've always run the full quote unquote senior profile on them, even when they weren't age appropriate. Does that make sense?
It does. So two comments. Number one, do we offer or do we recommend? This is for the veterinary world listening. Do we offer or do we recommend?
Well, both.
Okay.
Because the decision is ultimately the pet parents.
But that's correct. But it's phrasing is what I'm talking about. We strongly recommend.
Sure. Your pet needs, actually.
Your pet needs. And then I totally agree with you. You know, you want the full picture. And instead of spending $95, you're willing to spend $165 to get a complete set of lab work.
But I think when it comes to most pet parents or clients, when they come into the practice, because they don't work here, right? They don't spend, you know, 3,000 hours of their life here.
Right.
They're coming in and at one time everything's being thrown at them. And so we try to make things cost effective as well as informative and efficient, right? So like we're not going to offer the 2-year-old dog the senior blood profile and waste 30 minutes
Correct.
On explaining that to them. We're going to offer them the more concise, which is appropriate, blood profile. And then can certainly kind of lean into more if there's things found.
Breed dependent, right? Yeah. If it's a giant breed of dog that's probably not going to make it past 7 or 8 years of age, we're going to have a little different discussion.
Absolutely. So. And we talked about how pets age differently on this podcast before.
Right.
So.
And so, I mean, basically what we recommend is younger pets who apparently have no medical issues or not on chronic medications.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to recommend a kind of a junior profile that's going to hit the high points via blood work. But once they hit around that 7-year mark, we're going to do a complete set of blood work, a thyroid test, complete urinalysis,
mm-hmm.
electrolytes. It's really a full panel that we would do on any sick pet. And it's based on cost. I mean, I'm kind of was going to beat you up on the whole offer again versus recommend, but our clients are taking our recommendations or what we are, you know, putting on a piece of paper and asking them to accept or decline.
Sure.
But every pet still, the lifestyle is a little bit different.
So you asked me if I felt like it was equal to love. And so I'll ask you why. So tell me your argument when a client walks in the door with a 2-year-old mixed breed dog, why it's important for them to run blood work that obviously is seemingly quote unquote healthy.
Yeah, so when we do any procedure on a pet here in the clinic, we do lab work before anesthesia, correct? And we're looking for unseen and unforeseen problems, and we're trying to be as safe as we can and make sure that pet is healthy. So it's kind of the same thing. My mind kind of went to where we see a lot of pets that are rescued and adopted from other organizations, and maybe they had a surgical procedure, but we never see blood work. It makes us feel really good whenever we do surgery on a young pet, their lab work is normal, we feel like they're in great shape, until we see them again next year.
Sure.
So, we're doing that for surgery.
So what about if they don't need surgery? What's the argument there?
So it's the same thing. We should see where they are as a young
As
pet.
a baseline.
Yeah, as a baseline. And so usually the first their first yearly, so asterisks appear. Let's come back to why don't we test them at 16 weeks of age.
Okay.
But when they are a young adult, we want to get a baseline. We want to make sure there's nothing unknown to us, whether they have polycystic kidney disease, some liver values that are elevated, something just kind of off the wall. It would be better to pick up on that before they became clinically ill. We know where they are. We know what their baseline is. Some pets have abnormally high renal values, but yet they're normal. Kidney values, etc., or liver values as well. So,
Sure.
yes, baseline, are they sick or not? We want to know what's going on the inside. Even if they have a normal physical exam, maybe there's something brewing. So, why don't we test pet? Why do we test pets at 2 years of age with an annual, or 16 months of age, or 10 months of age, or 18 months of age? Why not 16 weeks? Why not 8 weeks? What are the reasons?
So I'm gonna sound kind of naive in this regard, and I know that like young puppies and kittens obviously can have disease, but typically the things that are gonna make them sicker are not necessarily gonna show up. How am I saying this? It's not gonna be a chronic condition for something that's so young and new. If they're sick, it's usually something that's more acute or happened recently. And we can kind of then, like if they ate a bottle of Tylenol, we can certainly run lab work and see the effects that the bottle of Tylenol has done for them. But at that point in their lifespan of 16 weeks on this earth, we're not really looking for a chronic condition. Does that make sense? Is that where you were going with it?
I mean, the answer is multifactorial. Number one, we have to come up with guidelines for our
Sure.
clients, and we're trying to do the best job we can for them and their pet to keep, their pet healthy and make them and their pet have a happy life. And so could are certain in certain situations, is blood work indicated every 30 days? Absolutely. Is that the norm? Absolutely not.
Sure.
And so we kind of come up with guidelines, and we're influenced by professors, consultants, teachers, et cetera, clinical cases as to when we recommend and what we recommend. And so this is just a general guideline, and I'll go back a little bit. If you have an English Mastiff that's three, we should be doing a senior, a complete comprehensive blood and urine profile. Also, yes, the whole chronic conditions, younger pets are less likely to have them, correct?
Sure.
Unless we diagnose something, we start them on a medication, and maybe we're going to, starting at 9 months of age, every 6 months, we're going to do blood work. The other place I was kind of going is young pets will often have lab abnormalities, but it's because they're young. Alkaline phosphatase, classic example. It's produced by the intestine, growing bones. With young growing bones, we have a high level, and then it can indicate liver disease. So you have to kind of take all those things with a grain of salt. But I guess the bottom line is we do try to have basic guidelines, what makes sense. We don't want to do something too often, but we don't want to do it, too infrequently as well. And yet we always have that option of individualizing the pet's healthcare recommendations.
Sure.
All right. I feel like we
Did that cover
have
all your who, what,
about,
when, why, where?
yeah, I think so. I think so. I just thought it was important to bring up because
Is important.
we get jaded to, what we recommend and trying to understand why, and why is it important? If a client declines an annual profile on their pit, and it's 12 years old on three chronic medications. We suspect there's something going on. You know, we're going to have, I guess, a little bit of a different conversation than a two-year-old pit, but really the conversation should be the same.
So we can go back to Zoe, my dog, right? So I have drawn blood samples on her annually since I've had her. So when you look at her, I guess her database, I mean, she has umpteen values. But earlier this year in June, or I guess mid-2020, she was just kind of acting off. She wasn't really eating, and which is very abnormal for her. I mean, she's like a vacuum. And so we ran blood work in the clinic, and it was slightly abnormal. If you look back a year ago when you had blood work done, or when she had blood work done then, it was 100% normal.
Right.
And so we, obviously she was actually scheduled in for a dental procedure, and we rechecked her blood work just before the dental procedure. And it was still slightly abnormal, but not abnormal enough not to proceed. And so obviously then, because we were monitoring a chronic condition, we checked it every 2 to 4 weeks, for about 7 months. So to your point, if there's something that you're monitoring, you are going to do it a little bit more often. It's not going to be the same panel, right? And hopefully the cost is going to be a little different for people.
I guess that brings up another really great point. If we, when we're doing, especially on a senior pet, when we're doing these profiles, we're getting information that had we piecemealed this information in on a sick pet, sometimes it's $400-$600 worth of lab work.
Right.
But we're able to, I'm going to use your word, offer the profile at a discount because it's a health screen, and we've kind of negotiated that with our reference lab. And so it truly is a great value when you're doing this. But yeah. Nothing is easy. Nothing is 0 to 100, A to Z, black or white. It's a very, very gray world we live in. So
absolutely.
I should compose a song like that or something. I don't know.
Something black and white?
No, gray.
Oh.
Gray. Okay, so let's move into a few stories. COVID related, you want to talk about the one article we read about during the pandemic? Are pets going to be abandoned? Are they not?
Yeah, so there was an article in the AHA news stat, which we often read, right, as an AHA accredited practice. Basically, the headline, which again, headlines are obviously meant to grab your attention, and in this case, it certainly did, but it says, pandemic-related abandonment rates depend on where you live. And so we've talked about over the last few months that we have seen an increase in both dogs and cats, new pets coming into the households in our practices. So reading that, you know, pet abandonment rate is pretty concerning. But if you go into this article, it basically says that there is a new study that started March 2020, published November 2020, from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and the University of British Columbia, where basically researchers found that early on in COVID, they thought that people would be apprehensive to have pets, or that they would be willing to relinquish their pets due to the possibility of the pet giving them COVID, essentially.
Right.
It says, basically, when COVID first hit, we had many concerned pet owners reach out to us discussing surrender for a number of pandemic-related reasons. But more and more as the study kind of went on, they found out that really more people are acquiring pets than relinquishing them. So as a part of the study, the researchers surveyed 312 people who actually adopted during the pandemic to find out why. Of those 312, about 38% said that they'd been thinking about adopting, and because they were going to be home, it seemed like the perfect time. 37% said that they were going to adopt anyways, and about 8% of those people said that being at home made them feel lonely or stressed.
Huh.
So I also thought that it was super interesting in the article that it went on and said that roughly about 9% of the people heard that dog abandonment was a problem in the media and they wanted to help, right? So like by acquiring a new pet.
Right.
And of those 312 people, only roughly about 3% said that they've already returned or relinquished a newly adopted pet. So if you think about that.
What percentage again? 12?
3. 2.6 if we're being honest. Okay. So roughly 9 people of 300.
In the study group.
Yeah. So, group. I mean, if you think about that in a bigger mass, right, it's kind of sad. And we've somewhat feared in the industry that that's going to happen. But looks like it's a smaller group than what we had anticipated.
Yeah.
So time will tell, I suppose.
It may be the opposite, right? Pets mean so much to their pet parents these days that they're more, again, we've talked about working dogs versus pets versus companions. They definitely are more human-like and serving that role. So
I do think we still have a lot of people working from home, and either their job is going to continue and their pets are going to be fine, or they're going to go back and their pets are going to suffer.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. I think time will tell. This is a very small study, obviously, with only 300 people.
And they're still, yeah, time will tell. Where are we at in 6 months? I think it's going to be 6 months from now, and we're not going to be out of this mess. It's just going to be a little bit different. So where's the hospitality industry?
Sure.
Right. I mean, we are fortunate that we have kept our jobs and we've served our clients and our patients throughout this whole pandemic, busier than ever, which I never would have predicted, nor would anyone else. And so, what's going to happen when people go back into the workforce?
So interesting. I know that there's a ton of politics kind of covering the news right now, but my understanding is that there was a big bailout for airlines recently.
Yes, a couple times, yes.
Yeah, so the latest like $15 billion that they can rehire furloughed workers or something along those lines.
Huh.
I thought it was interesting that during this same time, Twitter, of course, is like very big right now. Obviously, President Trump and Twitter. Yeah. So Twitter has a lot of Twitter has a lot of light on it. But people still turn to Twitter to complain and to essentially put companies on blast. And so during all this time, United, American, I'm pretty sure Delta and Alaska Airlines have basically all said that, okay, now that everyone can bring on snakes and birds and peacocks and whatever as companion animals, there's now a fee. So they've all kind of put a stop to this.
So they are letting people bring other, like turkeys and things like that.
I think there was a federal law that said, yeah, you have to allow them to bring a pet. Like, it can't be reduced down to just a dog or a cat. But it used to be for free. Like, you used to have this emotional support companion animal that would sit in a seat next to you for free.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not free anymore. But there are people turning to Twitter like, oh, great, look, we bailed these companies out, gave them billions of dollars, and now they want to charge us. And it's
the people didn't bail the companies out. The government did.
Interesting.
So,
I think there should have always been a fee. Anytime you put a pet on a plane, there should always be a fee.
I would agree
with
that.
Whether it's a snake or a bird or
in the cargo or in the seat next to you. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So people are super upset about it. But anyways, I just thought that was interesting. So there's this like massive bailout, which I don't really think is covering, people on the news aren't covering it because there's other things kind of foreshadowing or taking bigger limelight, but I thought it was interesting. It doesn't make me change my mind to fly Delta because they're going to make people pay to bring their dog on board. Granted, if you truly have still like a service animal, not like a companion animal that goes into like a nursing home,
right,
but like a true service animal, right? Like a seizure detection dog or like a seeing eye dog, something like that, they still obviously fly for free. So
very interesting.
Super different in my opinion.
Back to the we don't know what's going to happen. When you started telling that or talking about that story, when people go back to work, finances are always an important consideration, but are they going to get busier with their life? And let's say their pet that they adopted or acquired during the pandemic gets super, super ill as a 7-year-old. What's going to happen? Are they more likely to not seek treatment? Are they more likely to seek treatment because now they've had this member of the family that got them through the pandemic? Is it going to be the same thought process that we've always dealt with? I don't know. Our new veterinary healthcare plans, models, options are we going to need to have some of those emerge based on the thought process of the quote unquote new COVID pandemic owner, or is it going to be the same? I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
I feel like care for pets is still going to come down to like people just throwing money at pets, right? Like, it's not a big deal because, quite frankly, any money you spend on your pet is a big deal. Any money you spend at the grocery store is a big deal.
Right.
But if I still think pet insurance is going to be really big. I would be super interested to see, like, of these new acquired pets, like, how many of them are actually attaining, like, pet insurance.
I'm going to bet that less as a percentage than pre-pandemic, because we are so busy, and maybe I'm completely wrong, even locally here at Russell Ridge, are we having that discussion with the pet owner? I don't know.
So I don't know that
are they seeking
specifically
it themselves?
Here we are, but you know, I took a phone call the other day of a new client with an established pet in their household who's looking for a new vet, and basically he said, I need to bring my dog in. She's needs an exam, basically a wellness exam. Oh, and she has Trupanion. Like, it was just interesting that is like one of the things that he mentioned. Like, uh-huh. I want you to know my dog has pet insurance. So I don't know, with this whole like member of the family, will we put them on insurance plans more and more? I don't know. I think it makes things a little bit more affordable. I told you this comment we had from a client, the other day. I forget what procedure it was. Maybe it was an exploratory laparotomy, and basically where we went in finding something the dog had ingested and wouldn't pass, and it was like a $3,000 procedure, and the lady literally says to one of the staff members, well, my husband just had surgery and his was only
$1,500. Right,
right. And I think our exploratory, you know, out the door was about $3,000. And just the fact of like that someone would equate that, like, I'm sure your husband had health insurance.
Yeah.
If your pet had health insurance, it would cost you essentially 10% of that.
10%. Yep.
So interesting.
We need to do better as an industry and, you know, as local clinics, educating our clients and making those recommendations.
Sure.
I mean, even if we're knocking it out of the park, we could do better, because it is so nice to hear that an owner has insurance, you know.
Well, because it takes the fear of like, how am I going to afford this?
Yeah.
And a lot of the pet insurance companies right now are doing like pre-approvals, right? So historically, the way pet insurance worked is that you would still have to fork everything out of pocket and then wait 6 to 8 weeks to be reimbursed. So you had to at least come up with the money
somehow, some way.
And then you could, you know, pay off that credit card or give the loan back to your grandma or whatever. But now there's a bunch of pre-approvals. So essentially most pet insurances, they're going to cover the ones that we work with. They cover about 90% of things. So you're still responsible for your 10% at the time of services rendered, but then the insurance company actually pays us directly. So those clients don't ever actually have to come off of that money. It's not every circumstance is that way, but there are definitely times that it happens.
Yeah.
And to your point, as a pet owner, just the stress of coming up with money like that is just gone.
It's tough. I mean, some people have it, some people don't. And, you know, it's, again, multifactorial. You love your pet. What's the pet need? How am I going to afford it? What's the prognosis? There's just a lot of factors. So real quick before you sign us out, fun fact.
Okay.
197th breed has just recently been recognized by the AKC, American Kennel Club. And the name is Biewer. And it's pronounced like beaver. It's a Biewer. Biewer.
What B-word?
Biewer. Biewer.
The Biewer Terrier. Looks very similar to a Yorkie. Maybe like a Yorkie Shih Tzu cross because of the colors.
Yeah. So three colors, typical versus two combination mm-hmm. of most Yorkies. Most Yorkies are, would you say, black and tan?
Most, yeah. Or like silver.
Or the silver,
I guess, is what
and
they call
the tan.
Yeah.
And, or blue even. Mm-hmm. But they're typically two. These are three colored and very. So do you remember when the Havanese breed
came out recognized?
Like 15 years ago.
No.
I
think we only have like one Havanese that actually comes into the practice. That's like legit.
Huh.
But no, I don't remember. What's your point?
My mind is blanking on the breed, but So looks just like a...
it looks like a Shih Tzu
Yorkie
cross, in my opinion. They talk about it's because of the recessive... Do you know what a piebald is? Like a piebald dachshund or a cow?
Yeah.
It's essentially like a white, a tan, and a black... usually in some sort of speckle color or pattern. These dogs are essentially piebald, but they're long-haired. So, like, they have white and brown. Like, maybe one cheek will be white, one cheek will be brown, whatever. So, interesting.
The one thing I did learn is they are hypoallergenic, like Yorkies. And I never had thought about that, but... I would buy into that.
So they have hair versus fur, right? Yeah, yeah. Is what people say.
Not as much dander.
Lance's family, Lance grew up with Yorkies his entire life because his brother was, I'm going to say air quotes, allergic to dogs.
Okay.
Now that his brother is an adult, has his family of his own, he has a dog. He has a Maltese or two. I don't think a Maltese is hypoallergenic, but I thought that was interesting. Of the reason why they always had Yorkies.
But Doodles would be the other, you know, breed, which I know there's a lot of different Doodles, but one of their main claims to fame is that they are hypoallergenic, and that's a huge reason that they are and were so popular.
Yeah, but if we can really go down that road, like, how? If they're golden poodle. Retriever well, mixed with a poodle.
I don't know.
I know, exactly.
That's their claim to fame.
It's a claim.
All right, sign us out, please.
Yes, sir. Please check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People Pets and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe or download wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.